excellent. So, yeah, if you'd like to start the interview.
Okay, so it is Jasmine Butler doing the interviewing. It is 10:07 on the 1st of November. Okay, so, hello, it's lovely to meet you. Could you introduce yourself for us?
Yeah, my name is Mark Aesop. I worked at Peterson's from 1976 till 1977. But my memories of Peterson go back a little bit further than that. If I start at the beginning, my granddad, Alf Aesop, was born in 1914, end of 1914. And he went to work for Peterson in 1936. And he worked for Peterson's all his life. He retired in 1980 and he was the foreman at Peterson's. And basically he ran the Peterson smokehouse. Arthur Peterson, who worked alongside my granddad, he worked on the stand, on the pontoon, and he ran sales of fish for all of Peterson's customers, where my granddad was in charge of the smoking operation. Most of my family worked at Peterson's, I say myself included. My brother worked there, my father worked there, that was his first job before he went in the army, and a lot of other relatives worked there. My grandmother worked there. I've got photographs of my grandmother, I've got photographs of my grandfather. And yeah, fire away with any questions you've got, I'll do my best. I do know a lot about the actual operation of the smokehouse, about the machines. I've even got videos of the machines. So I hope I can help with your project.
That's great, thank you. Can we ask quickly, can you share your date of birth with us?
Yes, 26 January 1960.
Thank you. So it sounds like you've lived in Grimsby all your life.
Up until 10 years ago, I lived in Grimsby all my life. Apart from a little spell when I went working down south. London, didn't like it, came back. But yeah, I worked on the fish docks from, well, not as a proper job, but as a Saturday job from being 12. In 1972, I used to go down dock every Saturday with my granddad, and that was to the smokehouse. And basically, my Saturday job consisted of just packing kippers, purely and simply. That was it. Carried that on until I was 14, and you used to be able to go to the Education Authority on Eleanor Street in Grimsby and get a work permit to enable you to work, I think it was 20 hours during the school holidays. But I was working more than 20 hours. Wasn't supposed to, but, you know, I was working probably 40 hours full time. I loved it, and that's when I learned all about the operation, covering every aspect of the job, apart from working the machines. Because, you know, complicated machines always going wrong, so the health and safety would have had a field day. We never worked them with the guards on, just, you'll see the images in a minute, but to just wearing cog wheels going round and round and round. If you had a coat on, you had to roll your sleeves up, because if they got caught, you'd just take your hand in. What else about, there were two machines, I remember, I don't know whether they're still in there.
A lot of the machinery has been moved out. When the Peterson Smokery was sold, it stopped being a smokehouse and they burnt up the chimneys. But they're hoping to restore it to being a smokehouse.
Well, the two machines, we used to go down on a Saturday morning when I first started going down as my Saturday job. And I always remember my granddad saying to me, stop outside, because the place used to just fill up with smoke. So he went in the back door, went through the building and opened the front door, and basically the smoke dissipated. And as you walked in the back door, there was a little toilet to your right-hand side, and then we used to call it the gantry, was where trucks unloaded the herrings, which were going to be turned into kippers. And a, a, a kipper machine right in front of you, which was purely and simply set up to make boneless kippers. To split them a different way. So if it's going to be a kipper with its head on, which everybody associates with a kipper, it was split down the backbone and opened up. If it was going to be a boneless kipper, it was split down the belly, head taken off and the tail taken off and the backbone removed. So yeah, that was the boneless one was near the back door. The kipper machine was near the front door, and in the middle were a row of about 10 brine tubs where the herring, once had been split, used to get tipped into brine, coloured brine, and soaked for 20 minutes. And then it was hung on wooden speaks, which again wouldn't be allowed today. It's all stainless steel and everything. But the wooden speaks with nails in them, like an L-shaped nail, which the kippers was hung on to. Well, when you first get used, before you got used to it, you quite often used to stick the nails in your thumb. And, but yeah, there was hung on to them, and then they were carried over to the smokehouse, put in the smokehouse, and obviously as it filled up, you used to have to climb in the smokehouse and straddle yourself like that and hire the fish up the smokehouse. So that was downstairs. Upstairs, you went up the concrete stairs, which I presume are still there at the side, got to the top, and you had all the smokehouses to your right-hand side, and not all used as smokehouses. The first one was used as a store for the wood chippings, and oh wait, some fun again to tell you about that later. I've written stuff down for you. But all the smokehouses were to the right-hand side, and then all along the full length of the building were wooden horses, we used to call them. And basically where, after the fish had been smoked, you used to take them out of the smokehouse and stack them on there. So my Saturday job, I used to walk in upstairs. First job was a cup of tea, obviously. And then it was packing kippers, and it just seemed never ending, because all these horses were stacked from the floor height to probably about 6 foot high, rows and rows and rows of kippers, and you could just stand there packing, pairing kippers up and packing them in boxes, half stone boxes, one stone boxes. We all used to send out for a bacon butty or a sausage butty on a Saturday morning, have a tea break. And it was back to packing kippers. And that was from 6 o'clock in the morning through till about, we usually all done by 11 o'clock, 5 hours. And then it was off to the pub. Even as a 12-year-old lad, my uncle was secretary of the Exchange Club in Railway Street, which I think is now a mosque. And Harold Bryant, another fish merchant who dealt with herrings, he was chairman of that club. So I was allowed in, and I wasn't allowed a drink as such. I was on a shandy. So that was my early days, say 12 till about 14. Then 14, I went basically full-time in the school holidays. And when I got to finish school, and I was 16, 1976, I really wanted to be an apprentice electrician, and I applied for only 3 jobs over the space of about 3 months. And the final one I applied for was an apprentice electrician with the council. Didn't get it, 120 applied, and I got in the final 3. So I bit the bullet and came to work down dock. I stopped at Peterson's from 16 till 17, or about 17 and a half, and I passed my driving test. And then I set up business on my own down dock with 8 other relatives. And we had a little fish house, again down Henderson Street, but the other end of Henderson Street. We used to sell fish inland. So I used to go to Derbyshire and Yorkshire, South Yorkshire. So I went to Swinton, Mexborough, Wath, that area in South Yorkshire, and anywhere between Chesterfield and Derby off the A61, I used to sail for shore around there. I did that until 1989, and excuse me, I got married by then. The wife was pregnant with the first, and she didn't want me going down the road anymore. So I stopped working on the docks altogether, and I went to work for British Telecom. I did 7 or 8 years at British Telecom, and then a little spell down London at a job I didn't like, and then came back to work on the docks, but not on fish. I went on the cars, which is still going now. So I went to work for a company called ECM, and basically dispatching cars all over the place. And that went on until about 3 years ago now. Due to COVID and that, I had the chance to take early redundancy. I planned to retire anyway, you know, earlier. So I took my redundancy, and I've been a man of leisure ever since. So, but yeah, fire away with any questions you've got about Petersons. I'll see what I can.
Well, that remember. Sounds wonderful. You've covered a lot of things,
really,
and I know for me, you've already sparked quite a few other avenues that I think we might want to have a chat about. So, in terms of that, then. I think we've covered those. If we modify that question, maybe, you said your father had the first connection with Petersons. Your grandfather had the first connection with Petersons. How did he get involved, and when did he start working there? Did he work his way up to foreman?
I don't know what happened there, apart from my grandfather, Alf, who... Again, I've written you some notes, so if I miss anything out, you probably might find it out from this. But he went to work at Petersons in 1936. My father was born in 1936 as well, so I don't know whether that sort of prompted him to get a job at Petersons. I don't know what where he worked before that, because 36, my granddad would have been 21, or maybe even 22, but about around 21. And he worked at Petersons from 36 till 39, and then he did his war service, obviously, because of the Second World War. But I know he was back at Petersons by 42. Obviously, the war had not ended by then, but I know he was medically discharged. But I never, ever spoke about... My granddad never spoke about the war, ever. My dad, obviously, he say he was born in 36. He went to do his army service, which was national service, when he was 18. But before that, my dad, that's Ron Aesthorpe, he worked at Petersons. And I've got photos of him as well. And as I say, my nan worked at Petersons as well. But Alfie went to work at Petersons in 36. At some point, he became foreman. I don't know whether it was before he went to do his war service or after. But I've got one interesting fact about my granddad going to work there. As I say, he worked there from 1936 until he retired at 65 in 1980. He lived down Elm Avenue, which is just off Yarborough Road. And he rented his house. And I know from stories that Arthur Peterson offered to buy his house for him, and my granddad could just pay the same as what he was paying rent, but obviously at the end the house would be his. And my granddad refused, saying, "I don't want to be tied to a job." And he finished up working here all his life. So, yeah, bit of a mistake.
Oh, that's fascinating. And you mentioned your nan, your grandma as well, also works at Petersons.
Mm-hmm.
What was she doing?
She was basically what we used to call a herringale. That's my nan to the left. As I said, the photos are a bit dark, but they're all really good quality on here.
We're looking at a wonderful photograph of three people in 1940s, 1950s.
I would put it probably before that, maybe. Yeah, 40s, definitely. As I said, my nan gave birth to my dad in 1936. So whether this is before or after, I wouldn't know. But they were from a massive family. My granddad was the eldest of 17, of which 14 survived. So if my nan was working after my dad was born, if she was working at Peterson's, then I would imagine my dad would be looked after by my granddad's mother, because as I say, she had a massive family anyway, so it would have fitted in, you know, the more the merrier, I suppose. That's the Herring Gills. That's outside Peterson's Fish House.
Could you explain a little bit more for us what Herring Gills would do?
Well, the machines, I wouldn't know when they went in, but before the machines, the herrings used to get split by hand. And then all of the jobs, what I told you, as in brining the fish, hooking them on the wooden poles, which were called speaks. Then I would imagine the girls went in the fish house, in the smokehouses, and hiring the fish just the same as the chaps. That's another photo of my nan with a dock tower in the back, and you can tell that's just outside the fish house as well. I'm sorry I don't know any of the other girls' names.
Oh, this is wonderful.
So we're looking at a photo of two hairy girls, and they're both riding bicycles, so I take it that's how they were getting to work then.
Yep.
Oh, that's lovely.
My granddad could drive, but he never bothered getting a car. He always cycled to work. Unless he got a lift. When I used to go down with him quite often, again, I've written it in my little notes what I'm going to leave you, but he used to get one of his mates to pick him up. I remember A.B. Steen was another fish merchant who had the fish house alongside Peterson's, and he used to pick us up in his yellow Triumph Stag, which was great when you were a 12-year-old lad, you know. That's off the original photo when my granddad retired. And on that photo, the guy to the left is Bob Cormack. He was Arthur Peterson's brother-in-law. Then that's my granddad and my nan. And then Arthur Peterson to the right-hand side. And that one is the actual newspaper cutting as well. But again, quality is not fantastic, but they are all online.
That's fabulous. We've been we're trying to get an interview with the Cormack family.
Right.
So that would be really lovely. Oh, yeah. To show them this photo.
Well, I know Arthur had a son called Anthony, who was an officer in the RAF. And I know he got married to a Greek Cypriot girl over in Cyprus when he was serving out there. But as to where they've gone and what happened after that, I have no idea. But this one is one of my favourite photos. And this, I would imagine, from the age of my father, is about 1950. And this is Henderson Street again. But it's the other side of Henderson Street. My dad's on that.
Which one is he?
One of the youngest at the front, the one, I think he's about fourth from, where's my dad, that one?
In a lovely Fair Isle jumper. How many people were working at Peterson's, do you know?
I have no idea. I know quite a few of the names from my time at Peterson's, from even being 12 through till 77 when I was 17. I know who was working there then, but the earlier people I really don't know. But that was quite interesting. And this is how I found out that my granddad had finished his war service by 1942. It's a clipping from the Grimsby Union Telegraph. And the headline of it is Foreman at Fault. Arthur would be in the RAF by then, Arthur Peterson. So my granddad was basically running the place, and he got fined, I think it's 40 shillings, for allowing a light to be displayed in the hours of darkness. So that's how I know he was out of the army and back at Peterson's in 1942. 40 shillings back then was a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, and especially on such an important dock during blackout, you don't want any light shining. Oh, that's marvellous. Well, I think, because you've covered so much already, I think, do we want to start there again, maybe?
If I'm talking too much, just...
Not at all, this is amazing. And while we're waiting, because I will edit this portion out, I am going to have to blow my nose, I beg pardon. I do apologise.
Do you remember, like, the sights, the sounds, the smells of the building?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Right. We'll start with the smells, firstly. Kippers, smoke. Hard to describe, right? I mean, I actually loved the smell. And quite often, when I was working on the cars over there, I started at 5 in the morning. Even when I worked in Hull, I used to leave home at 4 to get there for 5 for the lorry drivers coming in to pick the load of cars up. And you could quite often get the smell of the smokehouses wafting. And I loved it. So I can't say I loved it all the time I was working at Peterson's, because, you know, you couldn't, like, leave work and go straight to the pub because you absolutely stunk. But yeah, that was the smell, kippers and smoke. The sights, dirty, dank. The lighting in there was really, really dismal. It was really, really dismal. And everything was coloured from the brine. All the wood upstairs, the horses, what the kippers was stored on. Right, you could literally, if you run your fingernail down it, you'd get gunge. Right? But yeah, and the sights, as I say, I've described what it's like in there, but it was all filthy, basically. It used to get washed down every day, at the end of the day, but it was just a jet of water. Now, we didn't have a pressure washer first off. We did get a pressure washer eventually, but it was just washed down with a hose pipe. And the yard outside, you know, was just swilled. We used to get an ice kit, fill it, bung the holes up, the drain holes at the bottom of the ice kit, fill it with water and just tip it in the lane, and it used to wash everything away.
And what about the sounds?
Clanking of the machines. I say I've done you two little videos, so that'll describe the sound. The machines, again, I've got the images on here and on my laptop, were... I remember as when I first went in, thinking they looked like a couple of robots. That would be as a six-year-old boy, and it reminded me of Robbie the Robot off Lost in Space. And the reason for that was all the cogwheels. I don't know whether you remember Lost in Space, but Robbie the Robot had cogwheels in his belly, and these kipper machines were full of cogs. I wouldn't say scary was probably the wrong word, but I was a little bit dubious of them, yeah. But yeah, just clunking of the cogs going round. And every so often a click, is the cogs wearing, and the click, which was an arm, which as the fish passed under, it used to lift up, and it shrunk back into place, you know, and it's monotonous, and it just drove you mad after so long.
But not much time for talking then, other than on a tea break.
There was no talking, it was all shouting. I think that's probably why I'm half deaf now. But, yeah.
Interesting. Were there many your age working in there?
On my Saturday job, I never saw anybody apart from my granddad, obviously, who I went down with, and two chaps and two women. The chaps was a guy called Harry Ballard, who died young. He died aged 45 in about 1982. And his wife, Jean Ballard. I remember their son, Mike Ballard. I think he worked for Peterson's for a short while as well. And then another chap was called Ken Gibbs. And again, he died not as young, but I think he died in about 1987. Kenny Gibbs. And I can remember he was always telling stories about, like, ghost stories, and which when he was a kid, you know, used to terrify you. So yeah, there was Harry, Jean, his wife, Ken Gibbs, Michael Gibbs, which was the son, Michael Ballard, sorry, who was the son of Harry and Jean. And then there was a lady, and I've wrapped my brains and I can't remember her second name, but her name was Hetty. And there are people who still know the girls who was working at that time, because due to the wonders of Facebook, I got in touch with somebody who worked at the fish house next door, which was Donalby's. And he was saying, you know, I can remember them two women who used to work at Peterson's. What was their names? You know, as soon as I said the names, he remembered. So, yeah. But as for my age, I didn't meet anybody my age until I started working there in the school holidays when I was 14. And for the life of me, I can't remember hardly any of the names apart from first names. There was a guy called Steve, a guy called Pete, but they were sort of my age. But staff at Peterson's, it was one of them jobs you either loved it or absolutely hated it, and a lot of staff didn't last long. Some came, I remember the odd one who he'd turn up in the morning and for his first day he'd go out for lunch and never came back, you know. But when I left school and I went to work at Peterson's at 16, I went to work on the stand with Arthur Peterson. I don't know why, because I knew literally everything about the fish house, but I think it was probably he didn't want me working with my granddad, thinking I'd be favoured. But anything couldn't be further from the truth, because my granddad, he was a tough taskmaster. As I told you, he was one of 17 kids originally, who 14 survived. And there's only two of them left now, and they're both well in their 80s. And I went to see one of them probably a couple of months ago now. I just popped in for a cup of tea on a Saturday when I came over from Hull to see my sons. And it's always reminiscing about the docks and how hard it was. And it was a hard job. And can you remember working for Alfie? You know, he was a tough taskmaster. And that's my uncle's words. And he was a tough taskmaster. I quite regularly got all the horrible jobs, if you like. The worst job was sitting behind the boning machine on a little box, a little wooden box. And it's going to sound awful, this, but he's sorting through the belly guts of a herring. And you were after the male herring roe, which was called milts. And they used to get him put in a little wooden box on him, like a little casket like that. But when it was full, it held 7 pounds in weight, half a stone of herring milts. But it kept your hands clean. you weren't dipping them in brine, but it was horrible. That was my job when I was working during the school holidays. Awful job,
Were the milts being smoked or were they no. to be sent off?
No. You didn't smoke the milts. The milts went out as they just come out of the belly of the herring. So you had to dip them in flour and fry them. Quite nice. Quite nice.
Were they smoking anything else other than kippers?
Just kippers.
Just kippers.
Only kippers, yeah.
Well, you discussed earlier about the upstairs and the horses. Was there an office in Peterson's at all, or did they have a separate place for all of the admin?
Right. The downstairs layout, I think I've told you, where there was all there was downstairs was, as you walked in the back door of Peterson's, there was a toilet to your right-hand side, which would have been condemned today. Then the gantry where the lorries used to pull up and unload the herring. The row of brine tubs and the two machines downstairs, up the concrete steps, and then smokehouses all to the right-hand side as you walked up to the top of the stairs, facing into the building. All to your left-hand side was the horses to store the kippers. And at the back of the building, there was another toilet, which was basically above the downstairs toilet. And the upstairs toilet was classed as the ladies' toilet. No better than the downstairs toilet, though. And alongside that was the mess room, where everybody used to get the cups of tea and eat your dinner. Alongside the mess room was my granddad's office, which was basically, he had a window at the front of the building. As you look at the building now, you've got two doors upstairs. Yeah? And where that door is upstairs, Grandad's office was in that corner. So that was the upstairs layout. So an office, a canteen and a toilet on the far wall away from the stairs. On the other far wall, sort of above the stairs, was basically the box store. And exactly what it says, you used to store all your boxes in there. The boxes used to come on a truck. And somebody would stand upstairs at the door and somebody would be on the back of the truck and you used to throw them up, throw the boxes up, but not one at a time. It used to be three at a time. Didn't matter whether there were one-stone boxes or two-stone boxes or three-stone, four-stone boxes. You used to throw them up and literally sandwich them together, throw them up like that, and whoever was at the top used to catch them like that. If you missed, the bottom one used to fall out, you know. But, yeah, so that's the layout of the upstairs.
Interesting. And how much were you getting paid doing this job?
funnily enough, I can remember. When I went on a Saturday, I was paid £3, for 5 hours work, which was pretty good actually, for a 12-year-old lad. When I went during the holidays, I was getting whatever the going rate was, which I can't remember, but it enabled me to save up for a few things what I wanted as a 14-year-old lad, which is mainly audio equipment. I was into my radios, no CDs then, but stereos, 8-track players, a little mixer. I used to think I was a DJ. And then when I started at Peterson's, in 1976, I was earning £16 a week, which was not enough. And I remember going into Arthur Peterson regularly, and I'm on about literally once a month, saying, it's not enough, I can't live on this. And I started on £16 a week in 1976, and when I left in 1970, middle of 1977, I doubled it. I was on £32 a week. So,
was it just you that managed to do that?
Arthur Peterson always, bless him, he always used to say, "I'll give you an extra 25 pence an hour. Don't tell anybody." So, I did tell everybody. So no, it wasn't just me, you know, all the lads got a pay rise. But I say, it was really low wages. I had friends from school who was on literally double that, you know, and they were only working on a fruit stall on Freeman Street Market. So, yeah, from £16 a week up to £32 a week in 1977. Yeah.
So, do you know where the fish was coming, where the herrings were coming to you from?
I do.
Ah, who were you getting them from?
Well, Peterson's had more than one depot. They had a depot, obviously, in Grimsby. And as you'll see from some of the photographs, what I've got, it says on the wooden boxes, Grimsby and Lowestoft. So they had another place in Lowestoft as well. I don't know much about it. I never went, but my granddad used to travel to Lowestoft. He also used to go up and buy herrings to Oban in Scotland. And he told me about he travelled up to Fraserburgh as well quite a bit. But as for who brought the herrings down, I've got a picture on here. It was a company called Arcroan, C-R-O-A-N. And they had quite a few trucks, red and green trucks. Got a photograph again. And they used to bring the herring down, usually overnight, but sometimes they came down at funny hours. It obviously depended what times the boat had landed and how desperate we were for the fish. But yeah, Crones used to bring the fish down, and literally it got split between the fish house, the smokehouse, and the stand. And the driver used to come, pull up at the gantry, and you used to get your dragging up and drag the fish off the truck, stack it all on the gantry, and then go round with the driver to the pontoon, and drag them off onto the pontoon, cover them over with a sheet, ready for the next day. Well, obviously ice them as you're taking them off, re-ice them. I used to come down at silly o'clock. I remember one night, and it would be 1976, the docks were flooded. It was a high tide and the docks were flooded. We had water coming over the top of our wellies back then. So, yeah, but I went down for midnight that night to unload herrings. Tough job.
Yeah. Sounds it.
Not if you like your sleep.
Do you remember your first day at all?
My first day?
Yeah.
As my proper job, as after I left school? Not at all, because I'd been going down there from, working from being 12. So I don't remember my first day from when I was 12, apart from it was packing kippers. I don't really remember much about working during the school holidays, apart from the job. But it was just it was old hat by then. I'd been doing it for 4 years by the time I was 16, I'd been going down there for 4 years working. But I don't remember much about the early days apart from packing kippers. That was it. That was all my job was from being 12 to 14. I do remember the little canteen, what I told you about. I remember going in there and having a cup of tea with all the lads and lasses. Great big white mugs with years worth of tea stains in them, and all we had for cooking was a little hot plate, which was literally a little steel square hot plate, and for like a tin of soup or anything like that. We didn't bother with much else. We sent out to Salisbury's Cafe, and then there was a little old metal electric fire that we had a toasting fork and used to do toast on that.
Was it quite a warm building with all the smoking going on, or was it, did it get really cold in winter?
It was really cold in winter, yeah, really cold. Not a nice job in winter at all. After I left there and I'd learnt to fill it by then, when I started my own business, and it was a tough cold job in the winter, but you were working that fast and that hard that sometimes you didn't even feel the cold. We used to come up here up the double ramps are still there, or there was there, weren't there? Yeah. And if you pull in a barrow, one of the old barrows with, what, maybe 100 stone on it. Sometimes if you've got 10 cake with 10 stone on it in each, you know, that got you a sweat on. So we used to walk around in T-shirts in the middle of winter.
What were your wider experiences on the docks?
What you mentioned going to the pubs after, sort of. What were you doing after work as well, on the docks as well?
Well, the pub thing, as I say, it was a meeting point. And again, I've popped it in a few of these notes I've got. The Exchange Club down Railway Street was a meeting point for quite a few of the Aesthetics. A lot of them, some of them who may and may not have worked at Peterson's, but most were involved in the fishing industry. Arthur, Grandad's brother, young Arthur, which was his son, worked in our company, which was called Ace Fish on Henderson Street. My Uncle Peter, Uncle Paul, Uncle Chris, Auntie Carol, and then quite a few fish merchants went in the Exchange Club on a Saturday. So when it was my Saturday job, it was straight to the Exchange Club, say a few shandies and just a laugh and a joke and game of dominoes or a game of cards, and then always back to Grandad's for fish on a Saturday. And it was all no kippers. It was Dover soles usually. We liked the Dover soles and had it. But I like every fish. There's not a fish going that I wouldn't eat. As for other things, as I got older, started mixing with a few of the older lads. There was a lad called Steve who lived on the Nunthorpe. Can't remember his second name. But we used to go in the Market Hotel pub and have a few pints, underage of course, but I think everybody did then. But as for mixing with any of the others, we didn't mix that much. You got on with everybody, but we didn't mix that much after work. But everybody on the, you got to meet everybody on a pontoon. As I say, I went to work on the stand with Arthur Peterson, not in the smokehouse, on the stand. And part of my job, I was basically a barrow boy, but I was buying the whitefish. Peterson, even though he was a herring and mackerel merchant, mainly herrings, mackerel, sprats, he used to have orders all over the country for whitefish, such as cod, haddock, plaice, everything. So my job was going around the different fish merchants, getting the whitefish for his orders and putting it on my barrow and barrowing it back to Peterson's, and then boxing it up and strapping it up and then taking it to the Grimsby fish trucks, BRS trucks. Met a lot of people, knew a lot of people, knew all the fish merchants. They all knew I was Alfie's son. I had my own little initiation ceremony, which was not nice. That was when I went to work on the pontoon proper. But yeah, everybody who came to work went through, you know, a rites of passage, if you like. I remember one lad, we threw him in, when we used to take the chippings off the truck, when the timber merchant pulled up with the wood chippings, and we used to carry these big sacks upstairs. As you got upstairs, I say one of the houses was just purely used for chippings. You used to fill it up to the top, from downstairs up to upstairs, with bags and bags of chippings. And then at the bottom, you used to take them out with a shovel for each fire. And one day we were carrying these up and we threw one of the new lads in the chippings and then tipped loads of chippings on top of him. That was his initiation ceremony. Another lad, as I say, we used to fill the ice kit up with water, and he went in one of those head first. He was not a happy bunny. But yeah, tipped him in the ice kit upside down. I was driving by then. Peterson's had a little Ford Transit pickup. So I was running to the ice house, getting ice from the chutes. That always used to terrify me in case I'd get too much, because it used to press the stop button and it didn't stop. It just carried on throwing ice out. And so you just like went over your truck like that, and your ice kits used to be way over full. But I was driving by then, and one day, one of the lads, it wasn't me driving, but he got chased by the truck. He had his barrow and he got chased by the truck, and he was nearly in tears, bless him. But yeah, we had a laugh. You had to have a laugh. If you didn't have a laugh, you know, I don't think you'd have struck a job, because it was hard, dirty, smelly work. But I did love it, funnily enough. There were times when you didn't, but most of the time I did love it, because you had a good crack with the lads, a good laugh. And I remember Fridays was always a treat. On a Friday, he used to get fish, and I'm pretty certain it was from AB Stearns. He used to get fresh haddock for everybody, and it was my job to take it up to the FMA club, and that's where all the owners, the fish merchants, went for. They didn't go to Solly's Cafe, they went up to the FMA club. And I used to take this fish up and say, can you fry this for Alfie? And it was for all the lads, and used to come out with this massive parcel of fish and chips. And gorgeous. Best, I've put in my notes, best fish and chips I've ever tasted to this day. And I've tasted a lot of fish and chips. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So you've spoken about sometimes people would drop the boxes. Are there any other accidents or happenings that stick in your mind?
I can't recall any accidents as such. None. No, I really can't recall any accidents. I mean, as I say, you might stick your finger with one of the nails on the speaks. But as for falls, no. Slips, used to slip over, but them days you didn't think about it. There was no accident book, you know, you just get on with it. And that was the culture of it. There was no health and safety, no accident books, no nothing. You just, you know, got on with it. So, but I can't remember anybody having time off because of an accident.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, then maybe on a lighter note, you mentioned about some of the pranks happening. Do you remember any other funny stories, any other good crack with the lads? I mean, that's suitable for recording, obviously.
Yeah. no, I can't really, not off the top of my head. We used to get up to all sorts of things, absolutely all sorts of things, but it was just par for the course. You know, all silly little pranks, like you could. It was hard, sweaty work sometimes, I remember, say, I had my little taste of somebody picking on me on the pontoon, and what he'd done, I had a can of Fanta, and he tipped the Fanta out and peed in it, and so of course when I went to get a drink, it was not nice. But yeah, but apart from that, I can't really remember any. It just, something was going on every day, you know. So somebody was, you know, getting the rough end of somebody else's treatment. But it was, you know, you were still mates. It didn't matter. It was just, that was what was done, you know. But met some good friends, and still in touch with some of them to this day, you know, from when I was working on there. And when I was working later on, obviously, for myself, because I did 13 years of fish rounding as well. So I'd done a fair spell on the docks. So.
Oh, marvellous. So all of this wonderful fish that was being smoked and was being taken to the stall, whereabouts was this fish going afterwards? Was all the fish you were smoking just for the stall, or were you doing orders for people?
Well, Peterson, Alf Peterson, had his orders all over the country. obviously herrings and mackerel were just being sent out as they were, not smoked. Sprats was another thing he dealt with. Obviously the herring melts, which was the bellies of the male herring. And then the whitefish, what he used to buy in basically second hand, we called it. And that was getting sent all over the country. I remember one big order was both herrings and sprats, but mainly sprats, was for Harewood House, for the birds, to feed the birds. They used to have something like 40 stone a day of sprats and herrings just to feed the birds. But they, yeah, they used to get sent all over. Again, kippers used to get sent all over. The as you're looking at the front of Peterson's smokehouse, the door to upstairs door to the left, there used to be a wooden chute that came down. I remember reading somewhere, where they had an electric winch. It wasn't. It was just a wooden chute that you opened the door, unwound the chute, lowered it down so it was at an angle to the truck, and you used to literally throw the kippers onto the chute and somebody would be on the back of the truck catching them, stacking them on a pallet. They then got drove to pontoon, and fish would be left on the pontoon for what orders Arthur Peterson had and for other fish merchants buying kippers off Arthur Peterson. And then what was left at the end of the day used to go to Sub-Zero Storage, which was down here, you know, out the back of here.
Oh, I think we've had the chance to have a look at that recently.
All right.
Oh, interesting. Do you know any of the other fish merchants that were buying off Peterson's at all?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
It was a very high quality product then?
Yeah.
From the sound of it.
Yeah, it wasn't the only smokehouse in Grimsby. Saunts in Railway Street. I remember a lady, again, she'll be well long gone now, but she was called Mona Saunt, who had a lot of dealings with Peterson's because they smoked kippers as well. And it would be a case of if they needed extra, we would take some round to them. And I remember being told by my granddad, nip round and see Mona and get me 10 ton of boneless kippers, because we were short of boneless kippers, you know. But as for fish merchants, I dare say literally every fish merchant, because fish merchants had their customers all over the country. Grimsby fish went everywhere all over. They all used to come see the Petersons or Saunts for fresh kippers. So fish merchants just used to come out. Not the fish merchants so much. The barrow boy used to come to Peterson's. Can I have 2 stone of kippers for Tony Walsham's? Can I have 2 stone of kippers for Alfie Crampin? Can I have J.W. Moore, who was up on Fishdock Road? I think that building's gone now, but that was near the ice house, right near the old railway crossing as you came on the dock. Because before I started driving the truck, that used to be one of my pet hates, going to J.W. Moore, because it was such a distance, you know. The others was all handy, you know, on the pontoon, but you used to have to wheel your barrow all the way up to J. William Moore for half a stone of kippers. And the worst was when you used to get there, give them half a stone of kippers what they wanted, get all the way back, and you went, another half a stone for J. William Moore there, and you wheel your barrow all the way back up. But I've got some photographs what will speak volumes more than I can actually tell you. So I don't know whether you... Right, so Alfie, how's my granddad on Peterson's stand with a big halibut, what we bought from somebody for an order? Yeah, that was working on one of the that's the kipper machine downstairs, and as you can tell, for that's my granddad, and that's. You can tell how dingy the place was just from that image. Yeah. That's the cycle lights, what I've told you about. That's the retirement photos. That's Arthur Peterson, his retirement, and that was 85. Again, same guy, Bob Cormack, who took over from Arthur. And in there, there's two other people who I know. I remember a lot of the faces. I remember him. I remember him. I remember him at the back. I remember that lad. And I remember that lad. But I can't remember the names. But in the middle there, that's my brother, Barry, when he was working for Peterson's. And that lady there is a lady called Jean Ballard, who I mentioned earlier. Yeah. So they were still there in 85. And James, what the article tells you, that James White took over from Peterson, or yeah. And my brother finished up going to work for James White.
Is that Ivan?
Yeah.
James White, yeah.
Ivan, yeah, that was my brother's boss. And Barry, my brother, he was sent over in 1993 to Iceland to set up a smoking operation. Or to help set up a smoking operation. Basically, the Icelandics wanted to do it like we were doing it. And unfortunately, he died in his sleep over there at 32-year-old. So, yeah, sad time. But, yeah, that's that photo. I don't know who the other lady is. That could have been the Hetty that I mentioned. But it's not a very good photo. That's a young Arthur Peterson, and that's buying herrings around the market. That, well, on the herring jetty, there used to be a separate jetty, which was the herring jetty. But yeah, that's a young Arthur Peterson. The centre one, yeah. Again, that's Arthur Peterson, and this is unloading the herrings in those tin boxes. Those tin boxes were 4 stone, and it used to be called, you see the piece. Arthur Peterson mentions it in a few articles. It was a cran of herrings, called a cran, C-R-A-N. And there he is, tipping it off the boat. He's actually tipping it into his own boxes, which say Frank A. Peterson, Grimsby Lowestoft, on the box. And that's obviously tipping them to check the quality, how good they were. That's a little article out of the paper about them trying to stop colouring herrings, but I thought it might be of some use to your article.
This has been absolutely fascinating.
Mr. Ivan James White, head of Grimsby Fish Curers, F.A. Peterson. So, again, it's relevant. That's that photo that I gave you earlier that I'd colourised, but I don't think it looks anywhere near as good colourised, but it's on there anyway. That's the black and white version. To say, from the age of my dad, I reckon that is around 19, I've put circa 1950. Ron Aesthorpe, fourth from the right, 1, 2, 3, 4 from the right. I've tried to do that with most of my photographs. That's my nan, and that is the back way of the fish house. That's obviously, yeah, she's finished work because she's in her civvies, but that is, what street do they call that? Is it Brown Street? Brown? Yeah, corner of Brown Street. And then these I've shown you already. I say you can tell where it is because of the dock tower. Yeah, so you can tell it's Henderson Street outside the fish house. And that place at the back, I don't know whether this is a photo, but those buildings have all gone now. But that place there used to be Pickwell's, which was the barrow merchant. He used to repair the barrows. And in some of the photos you can see the barrows outside there. Oh, that's just a random one that got. This is the photo where you can see the barrows at the back. Again, that's my nan in a work gear, in her oilies and a white coat. Outside again. Another article, which, even though I've got my reading glasses on, I can't read what it's about, but it's relevant. And then these are a couple of little videos that there is sound with it. Oh yeah. So that one. Imagine two on the go. So that little video is on the internet, and that's a machine that's been fully restored by the company that used to make them, called Fitadco, and they're based in Raywell Street in Hull. So that's where the machine's actually come from, filmed on this location there. Then there is another video as well. That's stolen. That's not my picture, but I popped it in because it's got Peterson's on it. That's an aerial photograph of the fish house. In case I needed to explain to you, that photograph of my nan, it was on the corner just there. All the other photos were down there. The earlier photo of the group of men with my dad in, that was the other side of the FMA club, which the FMA club was there. Harold Bryant, that's another fish merchant who used to deal with herrings, and Peterson gets mentioned in there. But that's the machines outside Fiscardo when they were getting ready for being dispatched. And the reason I've loaded that one is because it shows the covers, which we never ever put the covers on because they used to go wrong that often or need setting up. They needed to be set up for different kinds of fish. So size-wise and quality-wise and the richness of the fish. So different times of the year, the fish, all the goodness used to go into the roes. The goodness of the fish went into the roes. So they would tear easier. So they had to be set up a different way. And no good asking me. That was my granddad's job. Nobody touched the settings of the machine. But when they went wrong, quite often, you know, it could be a little spring or something like that, which was an easy repair. But sometimes one of the cogs, the jam, and the teeth would break. But a parcel of fish worked wonders, a parcel of kippers. We used to nip to EA Bacon's, which was a metalworkers, engineers, again down Anderson Street, but the other side of Anderson Street, and nip there with a parcel of fish and say, Alfie said, can you repair that? And they used to weld a new tooth onto the cog, and away you went again. So, just go through the rest. That is to sort of explain what the wooden horses look like. This is not Peterson's, and you see they're using the metal spikes, but Peterson's was wooden spikes that used to fit across those horses. So my first job was standing at one of those with a board across it, just packing, literally packing kippers all morning. I don't know what fish house that is, but that chap is definitely from Grimsby. And again, belong gone now, bless him, but I do recognise his face.
I saw that photo on social media this morning.
Really?
Someone saying that woman with the without the hair covering on is their grandmother.
Oh, yeah, somebody did mention it on... I saw it on Grimsby Fishing Heritage Site. I've had that photo before, though. But, yeah, I know that is from Grimsby. But what fish house, I wouldn't know. It might be Enderby's. Yeah, could have been Enderby's. Because what they are actually doing... yellowfish, smoked haddock or cod or whatever. And then that's a scene of herrings on the pontoon. And I know that for a fact because that lad there worked for Peterson's. So I thought Frank Peterson would be in, but I can't see him, Arthur Peterson. And then that's two old photos of obviously the stairs. And I wanted one with the door to show you. That's where we basically, the truck used to pull up with the boxes on. You used to stand in there, remove the guardrails, and just throw the boxes up. And then the other box was with the other door, the other side of the Peterson sign was where the chute was to lower the fish down. And I think that's all my photos. That's Crone's Wagons, who used to, and if you zoom in on it, you can see it says our Crone of Edinburgh, and that's who used to bring the fish down.
We have a photo that we've managed to buy for the project, which is a 1940s Peterson's farm.
Oh, right.
So I'd love to share an image of that with you because it'd be lovely to see if you recognise it. Or But yeah, it says Peterson's on the side did everything. So
well, that would be.
It might even be that. No, that's Mac Fisheries.
That's Mac Fisheries. That's where my dad went to work after Peterson's.
Oh really?
Mm. But that's my dad. And that would be when he started at Peterson's, approximately. And that was his job after Peterson's, driving one of those trucks. I drove one of those trucks when I first started on the docks.
Were they easy to manoeuvre?
No. You used to have to stand up at the wheel to turn the wheel. No power steering. So like when it was full of fish, because of the weight, you literally have to stand up at the wheel and tug on the wheel. I had arms like that when I was younger. Order of the Royal Kipper, I don't know whether you've seen that. No. Basically, I remember it happening. Prince Charles came to the docks and he got presented with a box of smoked mackerel. And he said something along the lines of, it'll be better than kippers. It says in the article. So Peterson, Arthur Peterson didn't like that very much. And so he decided to send a box of kippers to Prince Charles. And a Grimsby fish truck pulled up outside Buckingham Palace with a box of kippers. And then in the follow-on article where he apologises, we've got the follow-on article as well, where Charles's office apologising for the comments he made about smoked mackerel being better than kippers. He says, I will be sure to try Peterson's kippers. But apparently the kippers, the note which was enclosed from Arthur Peterson, finished up on the Royal Yacht Britannia. Yeah, so whether the kippers actually finished up on the Britannia as well, I don't know. But that's one article, and the second article's there with a picture of Charles at the top. So if you can make any use of them. And I think that's near enough all I've got for you, if I started at the start.
That's great.
It was a fantastic. I was on the Royal Britannia. Oh, there was Britannia.
One other, I don't know whether that's how tiring the work was. That's my granddad after he'd finished. Down and you're straight to sleep.
That's a great photo.
Yeah, but all those photos and articles on that.
If you pop that,
okay.
I'll wash my hands.
Okay.
I was on the Royal Britannia earlier this year. I wonder all if right. they still have it in their archives. That would have been fabulous to see.
Where's it moored now? Is it London?
Yeah, Edinburgh.
Right.
Well, outside of Edinburgh.
Right.
That's really cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I will pass over to Jasmine to close the interview out, right. I think.
Thank you for this interview. We really value you sharing your time with us, particularly you've given us so much to work with there. Thank you very much.
That's not a problem, Jasmine. I've really, really enjoyed sharing it because, you know, I am on for history, and I think if you don't share things, it just will get lost forever, wouldn't it? So, but one last thing, I've wrote literally a few things of what I've said. The English is not the best, the punctuation is not the best, and unfortunately everyone's got number one on, so you'll have to work from number one and work through that way if you keep them in order. But it literally gives you an insight into everything about from me first going down as a six-year-old lad, and I went on a deep water trawler on a Sunday. And then going down from being 12 to right through to when I finished.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. We'll be sure to use those and I'll look after those. Thank you.
Okay.
I've maybe one last question then as a little fun side. You said you like all types of fish.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favourite way, favourite fish recipe or a favourite way to cook kippers perhaps?
Oh, kippers. I think my favourite way would be to do them over the oak fire in the fish house. They were good. Quite often if you not took any packing up or you just fancied a kipper on a Saturday morning, we used to, if the fire was still smouldering, pop a kipper over the top, a little bit of, basically on one of the speaks and make a foil, put a piece of foil on the top and pop a kipper on there, and it used to cook. And the best kippers ever. As for favourite fish, I love most fish, but Dover sole and lemon sole are my favourite. Expensive taste.
Well, thank you very much again.
Loved it.